fall right down that rabbit hole. So reality is questionable. Try, but you just can't let it go. These two right here put on a show. It's paranormal overload with Southern hospitality. Haunted murder mayhem tip while discussing immortality. Locations with a dark past, history that comes to life. Hillbillies with a knack for everything that goes bump at night. Overthinking if you by yourself, these two will have you turning on the lights. Mixing in a little comedy to make sure it all fits in just right. Hey.
Welcome to Hillbilly Horror Stories. Now here's your hosts, Jerry and Tracy Paul, Heather Dolph Ninja,
and sometimes their cat Freddy, but never the ferrets.
Hey guys, welcome to episode 304 of Hillbilly Horror Stories. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Tracy.
Tracy, if people actually listen all the way through, they might have noticed a little different change to the intro song that we have on there. Because somebody wrote us yesterday and said, how come they always mention the dog Ninja, but they never mention the cat?
Oh.
Or the ferrets, which I threw in on my own. So we made a little change to that. And the reason for that, just like I had, told this listener yesterday, when Tragic redid our song that we do now, he threw the Ninja in there. We didn't know he was going to do that, or we would have had him do Freddy. So made the adjustment ourselves.
There we go.
All right. First of all, we want to thank all of our military and civil servants from our allied forces all over the world, no matter which country you represent. Thanks to all you guys, gals, and service animals for everything that you do.
Amen, brother.
We met a lot of veterans over the weekend.
I know. Isn't it great? I love to talk to the veterans, for sure. You know, we continue prayers for you guys every single day. We want you to come home safe, but thank you for having our backs and protecting us like you do every day.
And I want to say that when you walk up to a veteran and thank them for their service, you don't know the reaction you're going to get. Most of the time, you get a nice thank you. Sometimes you'll get a, hey, I was honored to do it. But sometimes you get way more than that. Tracy and I were in Bucky's in Richmond, and I walked up to a gentleman that had on a veteran's cap, and I said, thank you for your service. And he literally broke down almost immediately and couldn't even get his words out and said, thank you so much. I never hear that anymore.
Aww.
And but I mean, literally, before he could even speak, he had to stop and catch himself because he was starting to break down. That's how much it meant to that man.
Yeah.
Just to have somebody say thank you. So of course. Just remember that if you're out and about and you see somebody that you know is a veteran, either they have a shirt on or a cap, if you know, thank them for their service. And if it's somebody this present day because they've got their uniform on, thank them for their service. Their family and themselves, they sacrifice a lot for
us.
They
sure do. They sure do.
Also, we've talked to a lot of people this week that are struggling for various reasons. And we just want people to know that if you're struggling mentally for any reason, whether it be depression, whether it just be something you're going through in life, maybe you're going through a breakup or a divorce or you've lost a job or, you know, just, you know, we actually had a friend of ours yesterday say he hadn't seen his kids in a while just because his ex-wife is mad at him and she's just withholding visitation. And, you know, all these things can matter and these things can take a toll on a person. And whatever the reason is, if you want to talk about it, you can talk to us. Tracy and I are always available, or you can go into the group, 5,500 members strong, somebody always willing to talk to you no matter what time of day it is. And Tracy, if they would rather talk to somebody that's completely separate from us, what can they do?
They can call the suicide hotline number. It's 1-800-273-8255. You can also text them at 741-741.
Tracy, we have an all-British show today.
Oh.
So the story we're going to do is actually from Great Britain. And our guest today, a lot of you will already know. If not, you're going to want to. Kevin Eustace. He's the host of We Need to Talk About Ghosts, which is a kind of a comedy paranormal show. Mm-hmm. A lot of humor in there. He's a very funny guy. And he has a show that's even become bigger now called The Dark Paranormal that's a little more on the serious side.
Okay.
And he's going to talk a little bit about both of those and share some of these experiences. But Kevin is a very charming guy. You guys are going to love him.
Awesome.
I do want to say thoughts and prayers go out to the shooting victims of last week, because we were, this happened right after we had finished recording because we left early. But there was a mass shooting in Buffalo, New York, and Laguna, California.
Yeah.
And we just wanted to say thoughts and prayers out to all the victims, to the families involved in both of those horrible incidences.
Yeah, it's just so terrible. People, come on now. You know, you need to get your lives together and love one another.
Yeah.
Such a better turnout.
Yes, 100% better turnout. Tracy, tonight's story took place in 1953 in New York, England. To be more specific, the Yorkshire Museum on Museum Street in York. That's a lot of Yorks in there.
I was going to say, dang.
That's why, you know, that's where New York came from.
What?
When the settlers moved over here, it's New York as opposed to Old York.
Which Yeah.
So this is a small museum that wasn't very well known, but that was all going to change very quickly, as the museum was soon to make worldwide headlines due to the paranormal activity. It all started with the apparent ghost of a man in Edwardian clothes when it manifested in front of a gentleman by the name of Charles Jonas. Jonas was the caretaker of the museum at the time.
Mm-hmm.
This encounter took place late at night on a Sunday, September 20th, 1953. Now that evening, earlier in the evening I should say, the first of several evangelical meetings was to be held at the museum's main room. Jonas and his wife were there. They didn't live at the museum, but they were required to be there anytime the building was in use.
Right.
And then this night, it was in use by this group. After the religious gathering, Jonas locked the front door, as he always did, and he went to find his wife, who was in the kitchen. The kitchen was in the basement of the building. Now, they were preparing to leave and catch the bus home. 20 minutes before the clock struck midnight, Jonas and his wife heard footsteps in the museum right above them. They both assumed that it was the museum's curator, Mr. Wilmot. He would sometimes come in very late at night and just do some busy work that he had in his office. Jonas went upstairs to check things out and make sure that it was, in fact, Mr. Wilmot. He also wanted to let him know that he was going to be going off duty and him and his wife would be leaving soon. Jonas would later tell the Yorkshire Evening Press that he went upstairs to tell him that they were ready to leave. He fully expected to see Mr. Wilmot, but instead, when he got about halfway up the stairs, he saw an elderly man cross from Mr. Wilmot's office into another room. Jonas felt that the man was a little odd looking because he was wearing a frock coat, drain pipe trousers, and had fluffy side whiskers. He had very little hair and he walked with a slight stoop. So he decided that the strange man was probably some eccentric professor. They had a tendency to show up at the museum from time to time. So as Jonas got to the top of the steps, though, the man seemed to have changed his mind because he quickly turned around, exited the room that he had just went into. So Jonas just stood to one side of the the hallway to let the old gentleman pass by. He then asked the old gentleman, he said, "Excuse me, sir, are you looking for Mr. Wilmot?" Well, the old man not only did not answer him, he didn't even acknowledge that he was even being spoken to. In fact, he just shuffled past Jonas and began to go down the stairway towards the library. So because he was only a few feet away from the man, Jonas got a very good look at him. Good enough that he said that he could pick him out of a photograph or a lineup.
Whoa.
Jonas pointed out that the old man seemed agitated and that he had a frown on his face. But he also kept muttering, "I must find it. I must find it." Even though this is a very strange experience, Jonas said that this being a ghost never actually entered into his mind.
No kidding.
This was mainly because the man looked as real as any other person. But he didn't want this man to be, you know, kind of running all around the museum this late at night. And besides, they wanted to lock up and catch the bus and get home. So Jonas followed him down the stairs, and he noticed that the man was wearing what seemed to be elastic side boots.
What's that?
I don't know. I guess the boots that where they stretch or something. I'm not sure.
Oh.
He also remembered thinking how old-fashioned the large black buttons looked on the back of the man's coat. So the old man, still muttering to himself, went into the library. The library was dark, so Jonas flipped on the lights as he kind of walked in the library right behind the old man. The old man was beside two tall book racks, and he reached for one particular book. He then pulled another book from the shelf. The strange man was so obviously trying to find something. So Jonas thought to himself, this has gone on long enough. Thinking that the man may be deaf, since he obviously didn't respond to him earlier, he decided that he was going to reach out and touch the old man on the shoulder. But just as his hand reached the man's coat, the man completely vanished. The book that the man had been holding dropped to the floor. Jonas, somewhat in a state of shock, as you can imagine, bent over and picked up the book. The title was Antiquities of the Church. It was edited and published by William Andrews in 1896. Now, it's important to note that around the time of this incident, Jonas had not really been feeling well. So you can probably imagine that this experience didn't really help matters.
No, of course not.
Jonas consulted his doctor and told him about what had happened at the museum. Obviously, the doctor was a tad bit skeptical.
Mm-hmm.
He told Jonas that it was probably just hallucinations. Well, this irritated Jonas because he knew what he had seen. So he set out to prove what he had seen was in fact real and not a hallucination. So what would be the best way to prove this? How about another witness?
True.
He decided to have someone with him at all times in case he saw the entity again. Mr. Wilmot, the curator of the museum, volunteered to watch with him. So as the series of religious meetings continued, Wilmot stayed with Jonas every Sunday night for a total of 3 straight weeks. During this time, neither of the men saw a thing. Then, on Sunday, October 18, 1953, right after Mr. Wilmot had left the building, George Jonas saw the apparition for the second time.
Oh, crap.
This time, the old man came down the stairs from the first floor of the museum, crossed the hall, passed directly through the closed doors of the library. Jonas opened the door, and he walked in. He immediately checked the antiquities book, but it had not been disturbed. It was right around 7:40 p.m. at this time. It's an important time. Jonas assumed that the spirit must have not really approved of Mr. Wilmot since he didn't show himself while Wilmot was there.
Three's a crowd, buddy.
Right. So he asked one of his friends, a gentleman by the name of Walter French, to keep wait with him the next time. On the night of November 15th, it paid off. As Jonas and French were walking among the stacks of books, they both heard the pages of a book being turned. My initial guess, Bob Seger.
But I don't think that was the page.
So they get to the center aisle, and guess what was lying on the floor? That same antiquities book. It was open, and the pages were still fluttering as they turned.
Ooh, that'd be cool to see.
The ghost itself was not visible at this time. The stranger thing is, again, like before, it was 7:40 p.m. At this point, Jonas was considerably disturbed. He goes back to the doctor, tells him about this latest incident. Again, the doctor insisted that Jonas did not see a ghost. And to prove it, the doctor was going to stand watch with him.
Well, I was going to say, why don't you have him to go?
So Sunday evening came. By this time, these visits from the ghost had fallen into somewhat of a pattern. Something seemed to always happen on the fourth Sunday.
At 7:40.
I think 7:40 was the time it at least happened on twice, but yeah.
Oh.
So on December 13th, Jonas, his doctor, a lawyer, and four other people other than themselves were in the museum library. They were all waiting for the spirit. One of the seven people assembled was James Jonas. Now, this was George's older brother, a train engineer.
Okay.
Has no bearing, but I just thought it'd be cool for you to know he's a train engineer. That evening, the group circulated around the library, keeping a close eye, especially on that antiquities book. They did all inspect the book beforehand to assure that there was no tampering or funny business, no wires, anything like that. They didn't have to wait very long. On this occasion, Jonas's brother James was the first to see the book take flight. It didn't seem to fall at the same speed that a book would normally fall.
Mm-hmm.
It slowly edged itself to the end of the shelf. Then it almost floated down to the floor. As it landed, James Jonas yelled to the others, who immediately rushed to the spot that the book had fallen to. There on the floor, they all saw the book open and pages start turning. Jonas's doctor inspected the shelf with a flashlight. No threads, strings, or wire could be found. It did not appear to be manipulated in any way, shape, or form. Then the doctor commented that just prior to the book falling, he actually felt a cold and clammy sensation in his legs, but after the book hit the floor, his legs and knees felt completely fine again. The lawyer said that he would not have represented anyone who had came to him and said they had witnessed what they had just had. But here was proof before his very eyes.
Well, I'm surprised, though, that when everybody rushed over to see, I mean, does a ghost not realize what they're doing? Or I would have thought he would have just, like, left or something. Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, I mean, I don't know how long the book pages kept turning and stuff, so maybe it did stop. But mm-hmm. It happened enough for them to be able to notice. So Jonas stood up and he said, "Well, now maybe someone will believe me."
Good.
Soon the museum's ghost activities had reached the newspaper. Reporters began to clamor all around the museum's gates. Every Sunday evening, they were there hoping to find out about the latest incident. The next incident would be on January 10th.
That's going to say, didn't you say it only happened like every 4 Sunday?
Every 4 Sunday. On that night, though, Jonas was sick and he did not report to duty, so he wasn't there. Mr. Wilmot took up the vigil in the library, but apparently the spirit did not like Mr. Wilmot again because there was no appearance and the book was not disturbed in any way, shape, or form. By now, the news had reached the British Society for Psychical Research. They asked permission to conduct an investigation, and on February 7, 1954, they were joined by several distinguished investigators, including Trevor Hall and Eric Dingwall. Let me just say, if my name was Dingwall, I would be changing that.
Dingwall. That's kind of fun.
On this evening, though, the ghost did not appear, and the book remained untouched. Also present was James Jonas, again.
His brother.
He said at one point during the night that he thought he saw a disembodied white hand slithering its way down the bookcase. But he seemed very unsure, and he kind of took it back a little bit when he was questioned by the experts. And he eventually said that it may have just been a trick of the light.
Mm-hmm.
Hall and Dingwall were very tough researchers to convince. They concluded that George Jonas had obviously seen some kind of apparition, but that apparition could very well have been a hallucination of his own mind. They also said that the book could have been pulled off from anything from a rigged wire, even though everybody had vouched that they didn't see that.
Oh, come on.
In any event, the apparition was never seen again. Not even by George Jonas.
Well, maybe he got the answers from his book that he needed and didn't have to come back there no more.
I'm just wondering, I would have liked to have seen, I tried to do a little research and I couldn't find anything else on that. But I would like to have known if the author of that book might have been who that was.
Oh, the apparition, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But I don't know, I couldn't find anything where they had looked and seen what that guy looked like, the author looked like, and if it matched the description. But also this gentleman was, if you remember, they was saying, you know, I must find it, I must find it. So it was obviously somebody who was looking for something in that book, or something that he thought might have been in that book, but there's no way of knowing what the ghost was actually even looking for. But it was something with religious bearing, or he wouldn't have been looking in that book.
Well, all I know is my feelings would have been hurt if he didn't show up like he didn't for that guy all those different times. I mean, like, what's wrong with me?
All right, Tracy, so we're going to take a brief sponsor break, and then we'll be back. Obviously, we got Kevin Eustace coming up. He's a very fun interview, so you guys are going to like this.
Awesome.
All right, Tracy, some quick housekeeping. We've got two live shows coming up really quick. Obviously, we've got the show in Indianapolis with us, Tragedy of Cinema, and Middle-Aged and Creeped Out. That show is an all-ages show. It is at a VFW, but it's in a private hall. So there will be alcohol and stuff there, but it's in a separate room. But it's going to be a good, clean show. It's a family show. So if anybody wants to come, don't worry about that. There won't be bad language. And it's going to be a blast.
Yeah, I'd love to see you guys, for real.
That's July 16th in Indianapolis. And then right after that, on August 20th in Williamson, West Virginia, us and Annie Weebs and Brendan Shea from Serial Spirits will be there at the Old Hospital on College Hill.
Yay.
Right.
That's going to be exciting.
That's going to be a show and a tour that all comes. And that's in the day. It's a 1 to 4 during the day on that one on a Saturday. So... and it's our 6th birthday party.
Yeah.
So come celebrate with us and have some fun.
Don't say what I say.
All right, Tracy, what do you got? And both of those tickets, by the way, are on sale at hillbillyhorrorstories.com. You got and seating's limited to both. I think it's 60 seats at both of those.
Okay, good.
So that's it. College, the play show in West Virginia, that's my understanding, is the place is not very big, so we're gonna be crammed in like sardines, which is good. You want that in August.
Oh Lord.
Also, I want to say that because I forgot, but we have all of our new food products for sale. They are now available. They're a little pricey because shipping is basically $8 for each one of those things. So it's $17 for any of the products. We're almost out of apple butter. There's like literally 3 jars left.
I know. That has really
gone
over.
But we still got plenty of the other stuff. Go to hillbillyhorrorstories.com. There's a special tab. You can see all the different items on there.
Yeah. Thank you guys that have purchased thus far.
We
this
have
is very
sold
exciting.
Way more already than we ever thought
oh,
we
yeah.
would.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And this stuff's really good. So.
Yeah. Everything is, we're not just saying it's because it's us. This stuff, we handpick this stuff individually because it's made in small batches. And it's made with the best ingredients. So I can almost probably anything that anybody's had so far, the apple butter, the habanero salsa, the barbecue sauce, the regular salsa, and even especially the cinnamon pear conserve. Everybody that's had any of these things have literally written us and said it's the best that they've ever had of apple butter or the best they've had of salsa. So we're not just saying that. People legitimately think that. So
yeah, that's awesome. Thank you guys for your feedback on that, because we need to know for sure.
Yeah, thanks for the feedback on the food.
Man, I'm hungry. Speaking of which.
Oh, hurry up. We eat.
All right. For iTunes this week, I'm just going to spell it because I know I'm going to not say it right. H-Y-U-A-K-I. Thank you for your review. Greg H. T. Plank. Kiki Bubbles. Mojo Lobster, Jason B. 007, and Bay River Runner. So, this review from Bay River Runner said that they liked the show, but they had to turn it off because of foul language. And I don't know, it was something horrible else.
Yeah, it was just like a barrage of foul language.
Yeah. First of all, bitch. No, I'm just kidding.
Obviously, that was the wrong show because we, like, even the episodes with Ricky and I, where there was a lot of bad language, those episodes got taken down literally 2 years ago.
Yeah, so I don't know. So
it
couldn't be
those. Maybe it was one of the guests we had on, because we don't censor our guests. If we have a guest on, you know, and I had times where Amanda was on in the early days. We've had times where Bro Heil's been on, and Rimmel, and some of the others. And if they use language, we don't sponsor anybody. But we usually put out a little precursor that, hey, there's going to be some language coming up so people know. But I don't know. I can't please everybody, I guess. So it is what it is.
Yeah, it said, the show's contents is very interesting. However, I turned it off after listening to several bouts of disgusting foul language. Okay, Bay River Runner, you've got the wrong podcast there, buddy. Just to let you know, because we don't do that here. So take your dumbass self somewhere else.
What is wrong with you?
No, I'm just kidding. Anyway, but no, I'm just kidding. Thank you guys for your reviews. We always love and appreciate your feedback, no matter what it is, even when you're wrong. That's okay.
It sounds like it. All right.
And so, then our Patreon this week is Rachel Tucker. Thank you, doll, for your support. We appreciate you so much. You guys are awesome.
Rachel's in Australia.
Oh, good day, mate.
Oh, God. I'm sorry, Rachel.
Oh.
I didn't mean for that to happen, though I should have known.
We do love you guys so, so very much. We do appreciate y'all taking your time out to leave us reviews and support us. I mean, it means the world to us, because we would be nothing without you, for sure.
100%. All right. Now, can we listen to Kevin?
Yeah. Bring him on.
Hey, guys. I'm excited to have this next guest on. This really should have happened a long time ago, and I'm going to blame myself for this because I let it slip through my fingers, but I've got Kevin Eustace on from the wildly popular We Need to Talk About Ghosts and the Dark Paranormal. Kevin, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Jerry. It's a pleasure to be here, mate. Yeah, it is a long time coming, this. We've been friends on Facebook for a few years now, I think, actually. I think you once played a promo for the show very kindly. And we've never had the pleasure to actually chew the cud, so to speak.
Yeah, we played the promo, and the intention was to play the promo and then get you on shortly after that. And you know how it gets in this world, especially back then. I was working 70 hours a week on my regular job, and then putting in 60 to 70 hours a week on the podcast. And sometimes things fall through the cracks, and luckily we get it fixed.
Yeah, no, it's good to be here, mate. Yeah, thank you for meeting me with the time as well. I know we've got a little bit of a difference going on, haven't we? So it's 5 o'clock here.
Yeah, it's only 12 here. It's that's the thing. You know, you can do it early for you guys, because if you try to do it at 4 or 5 o'clock our time, it's 10, 11 o'clock. And half the time, you know, people are having to go to bed to get up for work the next day, or they're going into work if they work shift and shift. It's kind of crazy, but it worked out great.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about good things going on. Now, we were lucky enough a little over 2 years ago to be able to go full time doing this. And last week was a big week for you, because I believe you had your birthday.
It's coming up, but yes. So it's
coming up. Okay.
2 weeks time. Yeah.
All right. So you got your birthday coming up, but last week you were able to announce that after going part-time on your regular job, about 6 months ago, now you are 100% full-time podcasting for your two shows. And I couldn't be more happy and proud for you.
Oh, thank you, mate. That means a lot, especially coming from someone as good as yourself. So, yeah, I've been very lucky, obviously. And it's obviously all down to the people who listen to the show via Patreon. And there's a few ads things that goes on as well. So it's been really good. And I've been very lucky. But yeah, so I was working in a ticketing environment for like 10 years. And as you say before, I was doing the shows in my spare time, and thankfully it got untenable at the same time as it was viable to leave and go part-time somewhere else. So that's what I've done. And then I thought, you know what, the dream's one day to go full-time. And then luckily enough, the snowball kept on going downhill and gathering momentum. And and as of now, I sit here today in week one of my full-time podcasting position, for want of a better phrase. So yeah, made up.
So let's talk about We Need to Talk About Ghosts. Now, that was the first one. You've got two podcasts now, but that was the first one.
It's a very fun podcast, obviously. It's a lot of tongue-in-cheek stuff. You were saying earlier, it's one of those deals to where when you do, when you mix like paranormal with some serious stuff, with some funny stuff, it's kind of hit or miss. You either love it or you hate it. And we found that out with some stuff that, that we've done. Not everybody likes comedy mixed in, which is why I was telling you that we threw some other kind of episodes in during the week that were a little more serious. So that way people can come in and say, hey, well, we'll listen to this, but we don't like these, so we won't listen to these. And that's fine. People have choices. And as long as they keep listening, you know, to some of the episodes, that's better than nothing and reaches a different crowd. Yeah. Is that why you started your second episode or I mean, your second podcast, or was it just for a completely different reason?
Well, no, it's a good point that you make. And yes, it was. A large percentage of it was, but also personally for me, one, I mean, I got into doing podcasting because I've always been into the paranormal. It's not just like a fad, you know, where you think, oh, paranormal podcasts seem to be doing well. I think I'll have a go at that. I was like, you know, maybe 6 years old when I started trying to form a ghost club in junior school. And, you know, it's something I spend hours, as I'm sure you do yourself and most paranormal fans do, watching all sorts of tripe on YouTube and stuff, and wasting your life half the time thinking, well, that's actually fake, you know, and you can spot a good fake and all that carry on. But so when I started We Need to Talk About Ghosts, I mean, it's obviously a play on We Need to Talk About Kevin, with my first name being Kevin. So I thought that should imply by the title that's where it's going. It's a little bit tongue-in-cheek. And it's me how, well, it's me to 11 how I am in normal life, you know. I tried to crack the odd joke. The listener stories are all legit. They're all done very straight, but it's been trial and error. And at the same time, and that's me as I like to engage with people generally. That's me as genuine as you're going to find me is on We Need to Talk About Ghosts. But then there is also part of me that wants to sit down and, you know, I'll sit down and read a book by Colin Wilson, or I'll sit down and read This House is Haunted by Guy Lyon Playfair. And there's a serious element of the paranormal as well that I have that can't come across in We Need to Talk About Ghosts, because it would be too incongruous for me to put out an episode with attempted jokes and voices and blah, 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 and then the next week go deathly serious. So that's where the dark paranormal came in. I thought, you know, I could do like a long format. And basically, if somebody sends me in, if a listener sends me in a really dark story, this was the point, because I joke about it on We Need to Talk About Ghosts, that if somebody sends me in a story about a lovely pet, for example, and they say, oh, our pet Chihuahua died, and, you know, but every 3rd of July, we hear this little yap coming from the garage, and we know it's them. I'm not arsed. I mean, in the nicest possible way, I'm not that bothered. I want them to say, and on the 3rd of July, Satan himself appears with the carcass of the Chihuahua at the window. You know what I mean? I like a good scare, basically. And then I thought, well, I should have somewhere separate. So the point of the dark paranormal is that I want people to be scared. So it's built in that fashion, if you like. It's formatted in a way with sound effects and jump scares. If somebody sends me in like a 3-paragraph story, if I think it's terrifying, I'll ask their permission to build, embellish it. So the core of the story is 100% true. But if they've wrote, I went to a cafe with me nan, for example, I'll make up a conversation that took place in the cafe just to try and drag it to 30 minutes, but also keeping it within that flow of how their original story was. So everything paranormal in the dark paranormal that happens is 100% genuinely took place. The conversations may not have been, because that's just me trying to make what seems like a really good story last the length of an episode, if that makes sense. So it's kind of my serious hat on the one and me being me on the other.
It's a lot like Hollywood, you know, they'll do they're based on a true story, and the basis of the story is true, but, you know, they'll embellish it to make it, you know, a longer and sometimes a little more exciting, you know, movie. But
yeah, exactly. And also, I think, like, I'm sure you experienced this yourself, and I'm sure the listeners do too, is that, you know, dependent on sometimes when you're reading a ghost story or you hear a ghost story from someone, your brain will conjure up such horrific machinations that you'll have to stop reading, or you'll have to say, don't tell me anymore, you know, because your brain's took you to some really dark and terrifying place. And mine does that all the time. Like my partner could just say to me, I'm sure I just heard a knock. And as opposed to me saying, well, it's probably the heating coming on. Again, I'm picturing like the Grim Reaper creeping up the stairs. So when I'm reading these stories, I think, you know what? I bet you it happened like this. Like, so the core spine of it is identical to what they've sent in. But I'll just try and make it more atmospheric, how I'm seeing it in my mind as I'm reading it. So it's kind of, a, you know, it's an exciting thing to do as well, because I don't know how they're ever going to come out or end up, should I say.
I like that aspect of it, because that is a little different. There's a lot of stories out there that are, or I should say podcasts that are used like Reddit stories that you kind of feel like are 100% bogus. Yeah. And then some of them will use the true stories, but they're just so short, you know, that you'd have to have a bunch of them to make one episode. So I like the fact that you're able to kind of combine the two.
Yeah. And I think also, I mean, it's, my partner will tell you, well, will tell anyone who's willing to listen, that I will embellish the truth to make what but not necessarily on purpose or as a form of a lie. My brain will exaggerate things to make them sound more interesting, even the most basic of stuff. And I don't mean to do it. Do you know what I mean? Like I'll take a supermarket encounter and come home and go, oh, there was murder. This happened. That happened. Then I said this. And my partner knows me. So she's like, did you actually say that? And I'll be like, well, no, not exactly. I didn't use those words. I kind of just nodded. But in in my memory, I've like had this proper big argument. But to me, it's real, because I was like, yeah, that's what it felt like. So it's, yeah, it goes in, I read what I'm reading and I think, wow. And then for me, I'm telling the truth. This is just how my brain's translated it.
Now, I kind of do the same thing, but I'm just called a compulsive liar. So completely different.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, my partner's actually, she's forced it into me now that whenever I'm saying and regurgitating an event that's happened, I have to say when it's starting to go into what I've made up by saying, in my opinion, at the start, you know, or something like that, or as far as I can remember, and then I can say what I want, as long as I put a caveat in.
So let's talk about, we need to talk about ghosts get started. I mean, what was, you know, you had the fascination. Mm-hmm. What made you say, you know what, I want to start a podcast doing this? What drove you? And let's be honest, you've done that now for what, 4 years or so?
Yeah.
And a lot of podcasts stop before they get through with their first year. Some of them don't make it 10 episodes because it's a lot harder than it seems. It's hard to get an audience. It's hard to get your audio down. It's hard to learn as you go. It's hard to figure out what people want. And it can be extremely frustrating, especially when you've got other life going on. Yeah. So tell me about how it started and what kept you going.
So it started because there's a podcast in the UK called The Parapod, and it's done by two English comedians, Ian Boldsworth and Barry Dodds. And I fell in love with this podcast. It was done, what basically the gimmick is, one is a 100% believer, and he is, and one's a skeptic, and like a diehard skeptic. And they'll bring, so Barry, who's the believer, will bring like a really famous case, like the Black Monk of Pontefract or something, and will tell it, right? He tries to convince Ian Boldsworth what's going on. And he never does, or he's always got an answer for it, but they do it in a very humorous way, like where I've literally nearly crashed the car laughing. And, you know, Ian Boldsworth is, I know Ian now, I've met him quite a few times, but he's quite an inspirational guy, because he was one of the first people I heard using the phrase self-sufficient income, you know, meaning that you're not reliant on an employer. And I really like that. And he does that now. He's like a complete freelance, you know, creator. He's just a creator, and he manages to make a living from it. So that was a big inspiration. And then they went off. They've actually made a film now. There's a film out called The Parapod, which is their podcast taken to a feature film where it's them going on live hunts. Anyway, they stopped doing their podcast. And I was thinking, oh, you know what? I really missed that. And I thought, you know what? I've done stand-up before. I've done, you know, I can chat. I'm all right talking to people. Maybe I should have a go at doing a podcast. So I did. So I started We Need to Talk About Ghosts. I reached out to some people, such as yourself, with the promo. And what I did find is that there are certain people within the podcasting community, yourself included, in this statement, that are literally salt of the earth. I mean, I'm also a very amateur songwriter, singer-songwriter. And in those two different creative worlds, it's chalk and cheese in terms of how people are willing to give a boost up to people who are on a rung or five below them. It doesn't happen in the music industry, around here anyway. It doesn't seem to be. There's a lot of backbiting and keeping people down to keep your head above water. But in the podcasting here. World, yeah, I can imagine. And podcasting wise, I've just had loads of people being really friendly, and that, therefore that's made me the same when if speaking to someone who's starting out or whatever. But like you were saying earlier, though, Jerry, you know, things are, it is difficult to know what you're doing and to be confident in what you're doing. And interestingly enough, if anyone's not listened to the show and they go and check out We Need to Talk About Ghosts Now, you'll see it says Season 1, Episode 29 or something similar, when there's actually about 260 episodes there. But last October, I realised that I'd lost control of the format, basically, because I do a lot of rap, as you can tell, I like to talk. So I do a lot of rambles, and I was going on too long threads of nonsense. I realized the show at its essence had gone too far away from what it was. So I stopped for a couple of months, got my mate who's like an artistic guy to redo the logo. And I structured it so we've got like a, you know, so it's cut up to an intro, a review, ghost stories, and a part with my partner at the end. And I don't sway from that now, because it was getting to the point where I was doing like a 15-minute monologue on like going down the shops, and people don't tune into a ghost podcast for that. So we had to have a word with myself. And I think it's still an evolution, in all honesty. So it's interesting to see where it'll end up. I still think it's part being made.
We had to do the exact same thing. We, you know, at one point in time, we would go into our iTunes reviews and our Patreon supporters. And that was at the beginning of the show. So by the time we started the actual episode, I mean, we were 10 minutes in. And we found that some people just don't like that. So now we put it kind of in the middle. So, you know, we our structure now is pretty much within 5 minutes, we want to be starting our story.
Yeah.
And then we'll do our iTunes and stuff. And then and any show notes like live events we got going on. And then at the end, we'll have an interview like the one we're doing now. So people kind of know what it is. They know where they can fast forward, and they know they can get right into the story. And if they don't like interviews, it's at the end, they can just skip it. And it's because, you know, through years of experience, we realize what people like in the interviews, and they don't like us to do regular interviews. They like to hear stories. You know, they want to hear, you know, what were your paranormal experiences? And yeah, you can plug whatever you're doing and whoever you are, but we want to hear the stories, and then the small plug instead of, you know, it took years and years to learn that. And now I think we've got a pretty good format, but it took us 6 years to finally get it where it's going. But I know what you're saying. It's easy to lose control.
It really is. And it's and it was noticeable too, I think. Because I realized I was losing the grasp of the paranormal aspect of the show. I mean, don't get me wrong, because there's a hardcore fan base of We Need to Talk About Ghosts. It's like a few hundred people who get everything that I say and everything that I do, and they're really lovely people. And for those people, I could just go on a ramble for 30 minutes and they wouldn't be bothered. You know, they'd be made up with that. But for anybody coming in who's wanting to look at the premise of the show, as I advertise it, you know, it's true listener ghost stories with me, tongue in cheek, commentating on them. It wasn't doing that, and it just needed to be took off air for a bit, for want of a better phrase. I say that awfully lot, for want of a better phrase. Ironically, you need to find a better phrase and and start it again. So that's what I did in October.
You know, it is funny you say that, because I think we are all, and I say just entertainers in general, we all kind of have that, everybody loves us and the focus is on us and we can do no wrong. And sometimes that gets a little out of control. And, you know, like Tracy and I, we would have, I guess, some people say, hey, we love your banter. And then, you know, next thing you know, we're bantering too much. And then you got people say, hey, where's the stories? So we tried to, when we do our shorts, which is our Patreon episodes, you know, that's more of a chance for us to kind of be ourselves. So if you're somebody who loves the banter, you know that when you hear the Patreon episodes, we are a little more loose.
Yeah.
And I think that's how we were able to get around it. So we realized that, you know what, it's really not about all of our banter. People really, at the end, they want to hear the stories.
Exactly.
And with a little bit of banter. So
yeah, 100%. I mean, to be honest, I've kind of done that model myself, really. So on the Patreon, I'd put out two Patreon shows a week, One of them is a paranormal one where I try and get my partner on, and we, again, tongue in cheek, but you know, on the paranormal one, I'm basically trying to educate her because she's a skeptic in the paranormal, and knowledge has gone quite high. It's really funny. So when, I'll ask her a question and she tends to just say, is the answer Enfield? Because it's always Enfield, and she shouldn't know about Enfield at all. And the midweek one, I literally just pick up a little handheld recorder, press record, and I just talk for 30 minutes. Doesn't have to be paranormal, but that is a pure ramble, and that allows me to get that out of my system. So yeah, you're quite right in what you're saying about separating.
Tell me about any personal paranormal experiences you might have had. I know you've been fascinated with it, but have you had any personal experiences?
Yeah, I've had, I've had quite a few, in all honesty. So the one that people who have listened to We Need to Talk About Ghosts for a few years will know the majority, but the main one that I always go back to, which has been the most kind of visceral for me, was an out-of-body experience that I had. And basically all my friends know and have known since we went to school together that I'm into the paranormal. And one of them's a tarmacker, and he was doing a driveway in Wales and in this like stately home. And he found an old book on astral projection in this stately home, and probably definitely wasn't his to take, but he took it and brought it to me and said, yeah, you're into all this. I went, yeah, I am. So thank you. And at the time I was 16, and my mother had died that year, and it was like a bit of a weird environment in the house. And me, my brother and sister all still live with my dad. And it was a bit of a messy time all round. But anyway, I was sharing a room with my brother, and we had bunk beds. And I slept on the top bunk, and it was about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And as is like the norm for a Liverpoolian teenager, I went through my Beatles phase around that age. So I had Sgt. Pepper on repeat on a CD player, the album.
Nice.
Yeah. And I read this book. Anyway, I just read on the index where there was a chapter that said how to do it. And I thought, I'm going to not read anything else about the warnings or anything else. Don't need that. I'll just go right to how to do it, and I'll crack on. So I read this thing, how to do it. And it said, basically what it said in the book was, stare at a clock, a ticking clock, close your eyes, visualize the clock moving, open your eyes, see if it's there where you thought it would be, blah, blah, blah. But I didn't have none of this. So I improvised and lay on my back and stared at a spot on the Artex ceiling and closed my eyes and tried to visualize it, opened it, da, da, da. Anyway, long story short, I fell asleep. And the next thing I remember, my dad came into the room. It was about 4:30 in the afternoon. And he basically read me the riot act of, like, you know, 4:30 in the afternoon, why are you asleep? Go and get a job, this sort of stuff. And I just remember looking at him and saying, all right, I'll get up now, get out. And then I shook my head as like in disgust that he'd woke me up and put my head back on the pillow. And the second that I put my head back on the pillow, I was sat up in bed, and I literally had the time to think, hold on, I'm sure. And I could still feel my spine on the mattress. That was the additional weird thing. And I was like, I'm sure I'm laying down. I should be laying down. And as soon as I thought that, like that, I was laying back down, and I couldn't move. I was completely paralyzed. And slowly I got pins and needles all over my body. The weirdest experience that I've ever had. Like when you've got a dead arm, obviously, and you get pins and needles in it. I got that all over my body, every single part of my skin. And I could slowly move and kind of crawled down this bunk bed and ran downstairs, my heart pounding, and was like realizing what I'm about to tell my dad, who believes in nothing. But yeah, it was the weirdest thing. And you know, people have said, well, what was it like? How would you describe it? And I can't describe it. It's undescribable. But the closest I'd get to saying what it was like was the color green. For one, it felt like the color green. Or more specifically, you know, when you press down the screen on an old Casio calculator, mm-hmm. and it goes that like oil in the sun on the mm-hmm. road, that sort of black rainbow effect. That's how it felt. And I know that's a ridiculous thing to say, you felt like a color, but that's how it felt. But that's the one that I could hand on heart say, no one can convince me otherwise, that happened. I didn't sleep because it happened when I didn't expect it as well. I didn't then sleep right for about 4 weeks because every time I was about to drop off, I jumped up in fear because I thought, oh.
Freak yourself out, yeah.
Really did, freaked myself right out. So yeah, that was a good one. And I've seen like the odd ghost as well. When I say I've seen the odd ghost, not physically, but we've had like in our old apartment, we've had things move. Me and my partner have both seen a tap in the kitchen turn on by itself. As we were stood there, not talking about ghosts or anything, just having a chat in the kitchen. And we just seen the lever of the tap going up and the tap came on. And in that we've just literally moved house. I'm talking to you from the back bedroom of a new house that we moved into. It's not a new house. It's new to us. We've been here about 4 weeks. And the other day or the other night, even my partner was in the shower upstairs and I was downstairs in the living room. And next thing, a toy ball of the kittens that we've got bounced down the stairs and the kitten come chasing after it. So I shout up, "Have you just threw a ball downstairs?" And she went, "What?" I went, "Have you just threw a ball downstairs?" And she went, "No." I went, "Well, maybe the cat's knocked it down herself." Anyway, 2 days later, we're doing a podcast and my partner is a complete skeptic. And I said, "Have you got anything?" I always start by saying, "Have you got anything spooky that you want to tell us?" And she never does. That's kind of the joke. And she goes, "Actually, yeah, but I don't know whether I want to tell you because you'll freak out. And I know what you like, etc." And she went, "You know that night when the ball bounced down the stairs?" And I said, "Yeah." She said, "Well, did you not hear me just after that fling the bathroom door open?" And I said, "No, and I didn't, because she didn't shout me or anything." She went, "Yeah." She went, "Well, I thought you were outside because someone was knocking on the bathroom door." And she doesn't believe in it. You know, even I said to her, "Well, how do you explain that then?" She was like, "Well, maybe it was the wood settling. Maybe it was this." I said, "But you're a clever person. You'd know what the wood settling would be. You wouldn't open the door to wood settling. Do you know what I mean?" But so we'll have to keep an eye on this in this house. But yeah, so there's loads. Jerry, honestly, you know, I could crack on about stuff or family members have seen. But yes, in a nutshell, I've had a few spooky encounters.
You mentioned that you went through a Beatles phase back then. I've been going through a Beatles phase for basically 45 years. So my intention is next year to come over during the big week-long Beatles festival that they have at Amazing. Liverpool. So
yeah, I'll take you for a pint.
I've got a buddy who actually sets those tours up, Charles Rosenay. And he's been on our show. He's got a book out that's where he's got top 10 horror lists from celebrities from all over the world.
Amazing.
But yeah, he sets up those tours and tours to over to Dracula's castle in Romania. Wow. I've been talking to him about it, about coming over there, because like I said, I'm a diehard. You can see behind me, there's nothing but horror stuff behind us, except for Beatles stuff.
Yeah. And, I was just thinking that, yeah. It's funny because it's like people always say, you know, you're from Liverpool, do you have a Beatles story? And not, you know, you go, "No, well, we're actually a really small place, Liverpool. You know, we probably fit like 50 Liverpools in the smallest US state, I think." But yeah, so you don't realize just, you know, 7 degrees of separation, how close you are knitted in together. It's like, so my best mate's mother is Ringo Starr's cousin. So there's always a link, you know, in terms of this thing.
That makes sense.
Yeah, oh, it's such a small place. I mean, my direct story for the Beatles, very quickly, I once auditioned for the Pete Best Band as a lead singer. Yeah, and that was when I was 17. So Christ, what was it? It was 97? No, 96. And I went to this really big house, a really big dilapidated house in West Derby, which is a borough in Liverpool. And he was down in the basement playing chess with some other guy. And there was, let's just say they were smoking a cigarette and, a fragrant cigarette. And I came in and when I went in, this guy went to me, "He's already given it to someone. Don't bother." And I thought, "No, you've just done a bad audition." And I went down, and they were playing chess and I went, where should I sing? And they ignored me and carried on playing. And then his mate like nudged him and went, "One of these lads is here, you know?" And he went, "Oh, just go up there. Yeah. Pick a song and sing it." I was like, "Oh." And then they carried on playing chess. And when I finished, they didn't turn around or do anything. And I was just like, "Should I just go?" And they were like, "Yes, please." I was like, "Okay, thank you." Yeah, it was still that cool to do. It was in the Casbah Club, or what was the Casbah Club?
Oh, that's really cool. So, yeah, that's awesome, man. That's like you said, when you live in a small place, you're going to have those little connections, you know. I've got a lot of British friends. A lot of them are podcasters on the paranormal side, and they tell me that the paranormal is just not near as big in Great Britain as what it is like in the United States, which is why the US is where most of the listeners come from to all of their shows. What are your experiences with just everyday people that you run into and their interest in the paranormal where you live?
I think we might be the wrong sample size in Liverpool, if I'm being perfectly honest, because there is the myself and majority of, not the majority, but the vast DNA to Liverpool, normally generation, and same thing for me. My grandparents are all from Ireland, and there's kind of, unlike most other places, definitely in England, there's that, or there was that Catholic Protestant divide. It's quite a religious place. We literally have two cathedrals in Liverpool. For such a tiny place to have two cathedrals is ridiculous, but we have a Church of England cathedral and a Catholic cathedral literally at the end of a street which is called Hope Street, which is quite nice. But but yeah, I think that because of that, like, I was saying to my partner about this, it's a strange little thing because I'm Roman Catholic and Irish Roman Catholic, like from an Irish Roman Catholic family. And we've all, your life's kind of a superstition. Your life's one big superstition. It's, you know, you're forever crossing yourself if you see something, or there's always, oh, don't do that because of X. And it's always logically stuff that is nonsense and doesn't make any sense. But like, for example, I went to a Roman Catholic school, and you don't realize when you're in that sort of bubble. This is what I was saying to my partner, is that I look at, like, you know, I don't have any Jewish friends because Judaism isn't huge here in Liverpool. We do have Jewish people, obviously, but I don't personally know any. Because we were, and this is the strange thing, we were in a Catholic area, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And it's weird. And because of that, and I'm in it, I never seen myself as being a Catholic or as being part of a society as the way I view Judaism, for example. I see that as, like, you know, oh, that's got lots of, like, pomp and circumstance and, you know, events and all this carry on. And because I'm within the Catholic sphere, I don't realize just how, to a non-Catholic or to a non-religious person, I'm in one of those groups where we have events and, you know, like, people having the first Holy Communion looks a bit weird to people because the girls are in wedding dresses and the boys are, you know, there's all weird things where when you take a step back, you go, oh, shit, yeah, I'm a bit of a weirdo. So within that, yeah, I think Liverpool's the wrong test pill. I think within the rest of the UK, it's quite an accurate thing. Like, my partner went to university in Greenwich, which is within London. And she's just an atheist. She's an atheist. She's a non-believer in anything paranormal. And that's quite a, I won't say it's spread across the country because there's loads of paranormal believers. But yeah, to the extent of in America, not so much. But Liverpool's quite a superstitious place. It's, you know, it's right on the docks. As I say, we're all mainly Irish or Welsh. So it's a strange mix in Liverpool. So I think the percentage of people who believe in the strange and the supernatural in Liverpool will be much higher than the rest of the UK, or definitely the rest of England.
And what's even more funny about that is, like, for the amount of listeners to these shows that come from the US, even the US, the latest polls that I've seen said only 40% of people in the US believe in ghosts. So really? it's like to be such a small percentage, they really are a loud percentage.
Yeah. Yeah. God. Yeah.
Because somebody's keeping all these TV shows on the air.
Yeah, that's it. And you're quite right, though. I think the danger in the UK, I'm sure it's everywhere, actually, and the internet's made it so, is that when you, there are a lot of people who then try to go the other end of the belief scale and they ruin it for people. You know, they jump onto forums and start shouting the odds, or they start making out, well, you can't say that because that goes against the second sphere of Satan or something. Like, what are you on about? Just read a good ghost story, get terrified and go to bed. That's all you want to do.
Right.
So yeah, I tend to not try. If I see something where I think, that's a little bit arsey online, I tend to just leave it. I'm not one for getting into online interactions with the proper stronghold of paranormal believers, where, like, I've done a few podcasts where I've tried to do with the Dark Paranormal, for example, what I've been doing is a famous cases season where we look at maybe Black Monk or Pontefract, Berkeley Square, whatever, and then a season of listener stories and alternate like that. And I found doing the famous cases one, that's the season where I end up with emails from people saying, you said it was a Tuesday when the ghost first appeared. It was a Monday night, you know, or stuff like that. You said he had red shoes on. He didn't. He wore trainees. You're like, oh, my God. But, yeah, so I avoid those type of people.
Yeah, I completely get it. There's and you know, and a lot of times the listeners will be right, but it's just like, okay, oh, yeah. I get it, you know, especially if you start talking about historical things, you know, well, you know, this war was, you know, in 18, and then you find out, well, what it actually in that war, these people, and it's like, I get it. That really wasn't the major part of the story. That was a 10 exactly. second blurb in the story, but I get it. People want to be historically accurate. And we try to be, and we make corrections if it's pointed out and we find out that we're, you know, but sometimes the listeners are wrong too about what they're saying. So it's what it is.
Yeah. Like you're saying, if it's something pointless, it's like kind of say, like if I turned around and said, oh my God, your nan's just been stabbed dead by a guy in a red balaclava. If it's like someone stopping you and going, well, no, it was a blue balaclava. And go, that's not the point of what I've just said. The point is your nan's been stabbed dead. Do you know what I mean? It's like the trivial matters don't matter to me. And that's why I probably have to start things with, in my opinion.
Regardless of the color, you're going to a funeral in a couple of days.
Exactly. Yeah. Is that really what you're taking from this? The color of the bandana? Fair enough.
And that's why Tracy sometimes drives me crazy. I'll sit and go into this 10-minute interlude to the story, and then she'll bring up something from 15 minutes ago that I said, well, wait a minute, let's go back. So that guy was really eating a chicken bone while really, after I just told you about a giant disaster, you're going to go back to this kid eating a chicken bone. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, I tend to avoid those people if I can.
Kevin, it's been a blast having you on. It's been a long time coming. Tell everybody how they can keep up with your two podcasts.
Of course. Thank you, mate. Yeah, it's so just search We Need to Talk About Ghosts wherever you get. It's a long title, I agree, wherever you get your podcast from. And that's if you're willing to take a little bit of a risk and listen to something which you might not be your cup of tea. If you're a paranormal enthusiast, as you are, you're listening to Jerry's show, it might be, and you just want a ghost story, then go and search out The Dark Paranormal, and that's what you'll get.
Yeah, either way, I think you guys, most of you guys will like both shows. They're both fun. And if you listen and want to leave a nice review, make sure that you point out that you heard Kevin here on Hillbilly Horror Stories, so he at least knows that he's getting a few listeners that he may not have had before.
Oh, yeah. No, thank you very much, Jerry. You know, it's, again, harken back to what I said earlier about the podcasting community and how it's unsettling at first when people are so polite and so willing to go out their way to help someone else get ahead. And you're top of that list. So thank you, mate. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate it. And once again, my apologies. I should have had you on here a long time ago, and we might have been able to help in your progress, and you might have been able to quit your job 6 months earlier. Who knows?
I made some good mates over that 6 months, so that's fine. No, thank you, mate. I genuinely, genuinely appreciate it.
All right, brother. I'll talk to you soon.
Cheers, Jerry.
All right, guys, that wraps it up for this week. We hope you enjoyed the interview with Kevin, and I hope you liked the story and all British hillbilly horror stories.
Yeah, thank you guys so much for listening. We appreciate you guys, and we hope you all have a blessed week.